Hello.
Hi.
Today, I want to be talking with you, Rhiannon Davies, about community media and what that means, what that looks like, and what you've been doing for the past while. And starting off with this manifesto of yours, I would love to hear a little bit more about where that came from, where that started, and the 10 core principles that I think our audience would really love to hear about.
So to give you like a little bit of context, and I've been running my own community media project now for 5 years. I set up Greater Govan Hill back in 2020, beginning of 2020. Classic time to launch something, as everyone agrees. And I set that up because I'd moved to Govan Hill, which is a neighbourhood in Glasgow that happens to be one of the most diverse, ethnically diverse, but also one of the most deprived neighbourhoods in all of Scotland. And at the time, it had this really bad reputation. It still has a negative reputation for some people, which for me is all kind of linked to racism and xenophobia and kind of othering that happens. But there are real issues there. I'm not pretending there aren't, but they are often sort of described in a certain way by the mainstream media, by social media, which felt completely different to the reality of being in Govan Hill. So I had a background in journalism, in magazines, in community development, in running events, and it all kind of came together in this idea of setting up a solutions-focused community magazine. That was a space for people in Govan Hill to tell their own stories rather than have it told about them. So a magazine written by, for, and with local people. Rather than by journalists or by other people who are kind of looking into the community, it's more people being able to tell their own stories. And in doing so, to break down some of the barriers that might exist between communities, to build connections, and ultimately kind of bring people together. I was inspired by all these great projects in the US, who I've been looking across to for a little while before that. Places like City Bureau in Chicago, Resolve Philly, and just loads more. And so I applied back in 2019 to do this fellowship where you could pitch to go and visit places in the world that have great ideas and try and bring some of those ideas back. So I'd applied in 2019 to go in 2020. Obviously 2020 had other ideas and I couldn't go then. But I did manage to launch my own project in that time. And then once that fellowship was up and running again in 2023, I was then able to go and do the trip that I'd planned back in 2019. So it was a long time coming. I spent like 4 years thinking about it. Actually, it worked out quite nicely because in that 4 years, I'd set up my own project. I then had something I got to share with people when I was visiting, and it also meant that I spent 4 years really kind of following the progress of how this kind of emerging civic media movement, as it's called in the US, had developed. So when I got to go in 2023 and have 6 weeks in the US and Canada, in New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, Denver, and Vancouver, I then already had kind of relationships that I'd been building with these organizations and had this really incredible, inspiring trip where I visited just so many places that are rethinking journalism. And I think for me, that's what I find really exciting, is people who aren't trapped in this box about what the media is, but are instead doing things that respond to community needs, that are meeting people where they are.
And they're far more creative, right? Like there's so much more space where you're like, oh my God, I feel alive. I don't know about you. I often find that like when I enter that arena where it's not like got almost like the shadow of reality over it, but rather like a rejuvenating energy, you're like, oh yeah, like this is what it means to live and like care about the things that I do and what I wish to give to the world, what I wish to give to the people around me. So yeah, I love how you're describing things because that's what that brings me to. Like it brings me to like a different headspace where I can actually be like, oh yes, here's my motivation. Here's the emotional energy needed to actually pursue these projects outside of this very like gray area of like, oh, the world sucks. What are we doing? Oh, look at that. Someone went and did something really creative, really beautiful. And let's hop on that and let's bring that. And it's just like a reminder that like your desire and your imagination for something better is not contained just within you, but is like manifested and seen beyond you. I think that's absolutely gorgeous, which, speaking of, I really want to hear more about Govan Hill actually.
Yeah, sure. So Govan Hill is this neighborhood in Glasgow, in the south side of Glasgow, and it has this real long history of immigrants coming into Scotland and arriving into Glasgow and arriving into Govan Hill. So over the past kind of couple of hundred years, there's been people originally from the Highlands and Islands and Ireland, and then Italian people, Jewish people fleeing persecution, and then later on, people from Pakistan and Bangladesh, and then kind of like after that, people from Eastern Europe. And in particular, now we have a lot of Romani people from Slovakia and from Romania. So it's this real melting pot of people that I just don't think you get many other places in Scotland. It's normal when you go to other cities across the UK, but in Scotland it feels quite special. And so it has this incredible range of communities and cultures all brushing up against each other and all living in quite close quarters because it's all tenement living, so quite small flats, and you have multiple flats to a building, to share a close, as you say in Scotland. So it's got this amazing set of communities all happening. And what it's got as well is this incredible community spirit and resilience and just loads of activism and art and social enterprises and charities and community groups and people trying to make a difference in whatever way that means on all these different levels. And I find it really exciting. So I wanted to launch something which shone a light on all of these great people and projects, and didn't ignore the issues that do exist, because there's a lot of poverty, there's a lot of deprivation, there's a lot of structural inequality, there's a lot of barriers that people face, but really put them into the context of those structural inequalities and explored solutions, always taking that solutions-focused approach to covering whatever topic it is. And so we created this magazine, and the idea for the magazine was, again, as you were saying, create something beautiful, like create something that people like love to hold in their hands. We have gorgeous photos and illustrations. We work with an amazing designer who pulls it all together. To create a free magazine that we also publish in articles in different languages to try and make it accessible to different people. We work to get it out through working with food banks and refugee support organisations, laundrettes. We put it in doctor surgeries and community spaces. We also run something called the Community Newsroom. So we now have, I'm not there today, I'm at home today, but we now have a physical hub in the heart of the community as well. So it's a bright yellow kind of shopfront location. And we share that with the Ferret, who are an investigative journalism cooperative. And the whole idea is that it's making journalism accessible and approachable. And we have an open door policy. You can just come in off the street and have a chat, and people do. My favourite thing is to like wonder who's going to come in that day, because you get all sorts of people coming in, asking questions, wanting to find stuff out. And I really think of like that as committing like acts of live journalism. If someone comes in and asks you a question and you give them information, you're doing journalism, you're providing information, you're providing a service that people need. So yeah, I love that we have that opportunity now as well.
That is so cool. That makes me so happy. Which actually, that's also really interesting. So you mentioned the Ferret. They're a cooperative, right? Media cooperative, workers co-op. And you guys are CIC. I would love to hear about how your structure works and any reflections you actually have working directly beside a co-op actually.
Yeah, that's interesting. So when I set it up, I had no experience of kind of running my own projects. And I went to this incubator program for social enterprises. And through that process, I looked at all the different structures. We could be a for-profit or a non-profit or a SCIO or a co-op or all these different things. For me, I went with CIC because it makes a statement. It makes a statement that we are not-for-profit because it is an asset lock, which means that people can't draw profits out of the company. But it's easier. There's less regulation than with a charity. And not that I'm saying regulation is a bad thing, but when I set it up, I was pregnant during the pandemic. And therefore, I went with the easier option. And I think that also just gives us a bit more flexibility. Because we also don't want to be, although we do, our model is kind of heavily, it's not grant reliant, but grants are a big part of our income. And being a CIC means we're eligible to apply for grants that we couldn't if we had gone for a different structure. If we were a charity, we could apply for more grants probably. But a CIC allows us to apply for some grants, which helps. But we also wanted to be able to generate our own income. So we do that through membership, people who voluntarily pay £3 or £5 or £10 a month. We have advertising revenue, mostly through in the print magazine. We do kind of training and events and consultancies and anything else we can. We sell merch sometimes. We do sort of sponsored partnership things, but anything we can do to generate our own income so that we aren't grant dependent. So yeah, it works for us.
I love that. I absolutely love that. I'm making notes as you're talking, because I think there's a lot I want to come back to as well, even just in like the work we're also doing. I think it's part of the infrastructure, right, to not just do these things but bring light to these things, such that we're then in a position to communicate effectively and like reimagine how we actually want to like hold our own narrative as well. So absolutely love that. And yeah, thank you for giving context about CICs, because I think the other thing is that often when people come into these spaces wanting to again do things that are not for profit or in favor of change making, making, etc., there is this lack of information about the structures that can hold that space. And it's why I'm really into co-ops, because I mean, I've just come from like the workers.coop weekender, fantastic experience, really cool people. There's people from like Media Co-op, which are also based in Glasgow, and all sorts basically. And I think it's in those spaces that, again, you feel that rejuvenated energy, that reminder of what can be. And funny enough, though, I think CICs are probably one I'm less experienced with, but it's thanks to the CIC structure that, at least in my town, we've had places be saved because people in the community were like, actually, we want to keep this pub or we want to keep this bar. I think understanding and knowing that there's models beyond Companies Limited is just so, like, it's basic knowledge, but it's important knowledge. And I think sometimes we don't even realize how these structures can really facilitate what we want to create and what we want to see in the world, especially in the context of the state and all of that. So I really, really appreciate those reflections. And going back into the work and what that looks like, because I'm actually quite curious to understand where your 10 core principles came from, right?
So the manifesto, sorry.
Yeah, the manifesto.
Yeah. So I went to the US in 2023, and then I wrote up my kind of my findings and reflections based on that. And the idea for that, I didn't plan to write a manifesto, but I started writing it and I was like, oh no, this is a manifesto. I'm going to call it a manifesto. And a manifesto for greater community media. In the US, they use this term civic media, which is about journalism, which is responding to kind of a community's information or connection needs. I think civic media, although it sounds kind of cooler, it doesn't always land so well in the US, in the UK, because we don't use that term civics so much as they do in the US. So we call it community-centered media. So, which again, I don't know if it's the best term. If you have any better ones, please send them in. But I think we went for that because it kind of made sense and it was clear what we were talking about. So the kind of reflections that I have in there are, yeah, really inspired by places like Documented was one of the first places I went to in New York. And that is this amazing news organization that works to serve immigrant communities in New York who are often, you know, really struggling against the kind of the barriers that are put up for them. And I was just so inspired by how they just rethink what journalism is. So, you know, for their communities that they serve, their information needs are really great and they need basic information to be able to live. So what they were doing is going down to shelters with little pamphlets with information about where to get food, where to study English, you know, where to get benefits, all those kind of things, handing those out to pamphlets. And that's the journalism, because that's the information need they saw for the community they are serving there. By doing that, they're also then building trust, and that then gives them access to stories, investigative journalism, other stories that they can tell that expose the issues in the kind of in the structures that are forcing people to live in this way. So they then do more kind of meaty accountability journalism that they wouldn't be able to do had they not built that trust and built that relationship. They also do a lot of journalism via WhatsApp. They have like a WhatsApp question bot where people, which is Spanish speaking, that people can type questions and then they get responses through that. So they're really just kind of thinking about how we can best serve people where they are. And it was really exciting for me to visit them and just to sort of see this new framing for what journalism could be. I love as well in Chicago, they've got a project called Documented. It's quite a similar name, but it's a different project. And there they train up people to go along to council meetings, to city meetings, or to local school or police or health board meetings and report on them, because there's not enough reporters going along to those meetings, and so there's not enough accountability being done. And I went and met quite a few of these people who were doing this work, and it was amazing to see the kind of spin-off effect of them being taught how to go and do that. So not only were they producing reports that were going on a wire that was going to journalists, which meant that journalists could report on these meetings when they didn't have the capacity to do so before, but it also means that those people are becoming really engaged with what's going on, really knowledgeable about how power works in the city. And they're like starting projects, launching campaigns, getting involved with stuff. And that kind of spin-off effect was amazing. And then by them even just going to the meetings, when previously there was no journalist in the room, the fact that there's one of these trained citizens in the room reporting on it means that local officials started showing up more than they used to. And they started realizing they had to be accountable and they were being watched and being scrutinized. And there's just all these amazing effects from this quite simple act of just training people to go along to meetings and take notes. And again, it's just a fantastic kind of approach to journalism, not only to doing better journalism, but to bringing more people into it. And I love that kind of democratization of journalism, because it shouldn't just be the privilege of the people who've been to university or know someone who's a journalist or has a dad who's a journalist, or those kind of things which are so often gate kept the industry. And actually, the more people we can get involved with doing journalism means also the more people we have involved with understanding journalism, understanding the media, becoming more media literate, becoming more aware of how power works, how knowledge and information gets shared, and then being able to use that for their own power as well. So yeah, I found all that really exciting, obviously.
On that, actually, I'm quite curious to hear about how, because this is the other thing is, right, like, how can we start to translate some of the learnings we find in other contexts to our own? Like, how do we adapt them to our own in terms of, like, these things that you've discovered that you've been able to engage with? Would you say that they have changed drastically given the context, or would you say only minor things needed? Or would you say that, like, fundamentally, like, in principle, there's things that we can parallel, but in practice it looks just so different in especially like a Govan Hill context rather than like New York?
I mean, a big difference between the UK and the US is the funding landscape as well for these kind of projects. So in the US, where they have philanthropy and they have rich people who are recognizing that their democracy is at threat, and maybe local journalism that connects people rather than national journalism that polarizes people could be an answer. So in the US, there's money being chucked at this kind of stuff, like, you know, big amounts of money. So that's a big difference, because we don't have that in the UK. No one's funding journalism. No one's recognizing the value, unfortunately, yet. So a lot of the initiatives that you do see happening in the UK at a community level, at a local level, are very small scale. But there's loads of like great kind of grassroots organizations that are popping up, and they're doing fantastic work. There's just not enough financial and structural support for them. But I think the main lessons that I took from it, and actually, so what I've done since then is, now I've now launched a new organization, Greater Community Media, which is about trying to bring those lessons from the US to the UK and trying to spread them. And it's, for me, it's about the approach. So the approach is, rather than journalists coming in thinking they know best, thinking that they're the ones that should control the flow of information, I'm characterizing journalists here. There's loads of great journalists out there doing brilliant work. I'm not saying that everyone's, I love journalists, should say that. But instead of the media industry being the one that gets to kind of do this top-down flow of information, we need to get closer to our audiences, to our communities, and we need to listen. And I don't think enough listening happens, unless we're going there to get our story, to get our quote, to parachute in, whatever it happened, whatever we need to put the stories in the paper or the bulletin, or, you know, wherever that journalism is going to go. I think what we need to do is understand our communities a lot better. I think, you know, you're seeing what's going on in the UK at the moment, with obviously the rise of Reform and, you know, kind of racist riots happening, and these things that people are quite shocked by. You know, people are always shocked when the vote goes away that they didn't expect, because they're not listening. And I think by getting out and speaking to people and listening to people and understanding people, and then doing journalism which serves those people's information and connection needs, that helps people to understand their neighbor better rather than continuing to kind of other each other, that kind of journalism to me is key. I really believe in this sort of the power of talking to your neighbor, the power of talking to people in your street and knowing their names and being in a WhatsApp group with them and stuff like that. Once you start building connection, that's a kind of a way to fight a lot of the far right narratives, the polarizing narratives, the divisive narratives that want to pull people to apart, you know, often for their own nefarious purposes. Whereas if you can connect people by reading a local paper. And that's the nice thing about Greater Govan Hill, is that we put in stories, so people might not think that they care about the history of the Romani people, for example. They might have their own prejudices against those people, but they might care about, you know, an article about why our bins aren't getting collected the same way as they used to. So they might pick up the magazine and read that one, and then next to it, there's an article about the history of Romani people. And actually, so people in a print product, people will flick through and read the whole magazine. And I've had loads of people tell me they feel more connected to their neighbours and their neighbourhood because of the magazine. We've done things like having like a multilingual chit-chat pullout that you can stick on your fridge. And now people say that they can say hello to their neighbours in their own language. And just stuff like that. For me, that should be the purpose of journalism. Yes, we should do accountability stuff. And yes, we should do investigative stuff. But we should also be thinking about building connections and creating pathways of information that facilitate connection. for me.
Absolutely. Oh my God, I love everything you're saying. It makes me very happy. I think, yeah, it's curious that you should mention neighbors as well, right? Like there's so many instances, myself included, where you might know a few people in your building, but you certainly don't know everyone. And then that disconnection, I think, is something that is becoming or has been for a long time now, very prevalent, very common, again, linked to this atomization of people, of cities, of communities, of families even. I guess I'm also curious to understand how you might want to translate this into the context of cities. I feel like big cities especially, right, because we're talking about Govan Hill, that's one part of Glasgow. How do we start to kind of see different regions, municipalities, wherever that looks like, start to connect? Does it really have to come down to these individual locations developing the infrastructure that such as the infrastructure that you're creating? I mean, there's never an easy, you know, fix to structural issues in the world, but how do we make this work be able to translate and kind of build up in a way that isn't excessively gradual, but starts to see that more collective knock-on effect that is far more conducive to large-scale change?
For me, I'm really all about the local and the hyperlocal. And I think because when I launched the magazine, if I'd made it about Glasgow South Side, for example, which is the neighbourhood in which, the larger neighbourhood in which Govan Hill sits, then if I was writing stories for the wealthier neighbourhoods that, you know, that are surrounding Govan Hill, it would no longer be serving the people of Govan Hill in the same way. And keeping that quite tight focus really, I think, helps it stay really rooted and really connected to local people. That doesn't mean we can't do things at a Southside or citywide level as well. And one of the things that, you know, that we also do is run the Scottish Beacon. And the Scottish Beacon is a collaborative network of 25 independent community-based publications. And we have partners in Shetland and Orkney and Lewis and Edinburgh and Dumfries and Galloway and the Borders. So all over Scotland. And for the example, at the moment, I just came off a meeting with some of them because we're working on this collaborative project looking at kind of the impact of the big corporate renewables industry on communities in Scotland and how people's voices are not being heard and how democracy is not always working as it should. And it was really powerful to be on that meeting to hear the conversations with all of our partners who are in these different places, all talking about the same story and sometimes the same organisations that are giving them the same runaround in the two different places. But actually that power then of collaboration. So that's one of my points of my manifesto, is that I think the future of journalism should be collaborative. And so by being able to collaborate on this one story, we're already seeing these links. And so when it comes to publishing, we're going to be trying to turn those local stories now that are serving little villages or islands or towns that would normally just be a local story in that little village or island or town. But when you see it happening across Scotland in lots of different ways, then it becomes a national story. So that's what I'm excited about. That's where I kind of see the answer to that question, is through collaborating and having this network of linked but independent publications that are serving the communities where they are, being able to work with other communities and other publications, then that creates something much bigger than what we could do alone.
Yeah, exactly. The embodiment of grassroots, of bottom-up working, and how that actually then goes on to create bigger groups, coalitions, collectives. And I guess that partly links to your fifth point, right? Impact over output, in that this very structure or way of approaching is going to have far better impact long term over any top down approach adopted in this space. Yeah.
And I think for journalists, too often we romanticise what journalism is. It's the beautiful long form essay where we get to use our lovely turns of phrases and, you know, and actually, if only 20 people read it, then it's maybe a lovely essay, it's maybe beautifully written, but is it making the impact that you want it to make? And maybe there's more impact to hold a community meeting and host a conversation. And actually that does the job of informing more people and connecting more people and getting them, empowering more people to take action. So trying to think really outside the box of what journalism looks like, I think it feels really important. I love like text message services.
Yeah, that was fascinating. Yeah,
they have in Detroit, in places where, you know, you can text and ask a question, and then the journalist will, if they can, respond to the question with some information. But if lots of people ask the same question, then they can go away and do some journalism on it. So it's trying to really, yeah, rethink what these outputs are. And especially, you know, we live in this world of continual change and digitalization and social media, and no one really connecting with they're written stories in the same way. So we need to be on top of and adapting to that. And the rise of AI, of course, is going to kind of just massively expedite all of that.
And yeah, the fact that tech is being treated as a solution in ways that, put very simply, you just can't replace human connection. You cannot replace people being in a room together. If you're able to just get people in a room together, ideas will form, plans will be made, and action will be taken following just people sharing a space. I think I love this, that in particularly in relation to media and to journalism, you're able to start conversations that are able to translate to the homes of people. You've used this word ecosystem in point 7, right? So yeah, how does it become an ecosystem?
Yeah, I think, again, it feels important to me to not just think of journalism as the only way that people receive information, because we know that it's not. We know that TikTok or YouTube or reading a notice board or going to the library and asking for information, there's all these different flows of information in a local community of how people understand and make sense of where they live and how they try and improve that for themselves. And I think we need to, journalism needs to stop sort of thinking of itself in this silo that is, you know, it's better and different and apart from all these things. It's very much just one part of this ecosystem. I heard a quote when I was in America that someone said that I thought was good, which is, we're not the public square, we're just another voice hollering within it. So I think recognizing, you know, being humble about that, feels quite important, and being connected to all these other parts, to understanding how you can work with libraries, how you can work with local Facebook groups, how you can put up a notice board on your newsroom window, as we have done, and understanding and not being precious about people needing to get information from you. You know, when you're not beholden to a digital programmatic advertising model, then it's about getting the information out there as opposed to getting the clicks, which is what's wrong with a lot of the corporate local media, unfortunately.
Yeah, fundamentally the motivations behind why we do anything, and the fact that there's like things that cannot be industries and effectively serve the supposed purpose and goal that it was meant to serve originally, be that healthcare, be that the dissemination of information, be that railway and transport. So kind of starting to be able to configure these as being rooted in their actual purposes, in their community purposes. Something that I always find quite interesting is the ability to adapt around a given economic system, or adapt with, in part. At the end of the day, there are going to be concessions, whether that's in your structural model, your funding model, wherever that looks like. But then simultaneously being able to, you know, build the new and the shell of the old, or however that phrase goes. I try to come back to that because ultimately we're having to progress and create change in the given circumstances to create fundamentally new circumstances. You are just such an interesting individual with such fantastic work.
Go check out greatercommunitymedia.com or go greatergivenhill.com if you want to see the kind of, or scottishbeacon.com if you want to see any of the work that I've been talking about, I suppose, and support your local independent journalists. They need you.
Absolutely. And would you say that getting in contact with you would be a really good way to start doing this in other places?
Yeah. So what we're trying to do with Greater Community Media is support the launch of people, to support people to be able to launch their own community-centered media projects, or support media and journalists to become more community-centered media, community-centered in their approach. So if you, and it's great at the moment, there's lots of people getting in touch who are wanting to sort of thinking of starting their own thing and want to do something different and don't really know how to go about it. So if you have ideas like that, I'm really happy to chat. So please do, yeah, get in touch.
Fantastic. What a brilliant resource to have in this world. Thank you so much, Rihanna, for your words, everything, your reflections. It's been really wonderful to hear that. And yeah, thank you for our audience for listening in. I'll leave it at that.
Thanks for having me.
And nice to chat. Thank you.